You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, housing rights activists are celebrating victories won in the recently concluded legislative session while preparing the groundwork for a broader campaign to overturn the state-level ban on rent control. We'll get an update about what's new at Boulder City Hall with reporter Shay Castle of Boulder Beat News. Finally, Miriam Schiff shares a preview of this afternoon's Metro Show, airing at 3 p.m., when she and her guests discuss the significant impact the pandemic has had on mental health. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the latest Jim Hightower commentary just after the BBC headlines. And then it's a public affair. Today's show is hosted by Rosana Longo and opens a series on storytellers of color. As always on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. But first, these headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
Yesterday, Boulder County residents celebrated Pride Month in cars covered with streamers, banners, balloons, and inflatable unicorns, moving along streets in Longmont, Boulder, and Lafayette. Sunday's motorcades gave the LGBTQ community and its supporters a chance to be seen and to feel support from their communities. The Daily Camera reports that various festivities were organized on the same day in lieu of the typical parades held during Pride Month and in culmination of a week of activities planned by Out Boulder County. U.S. Congressmember Joe Neguse, Democrat from Lafayette, has joined other representatives in urging Attorney General Merrick Garland to consider dropping a legal challenge to a proposed ban on privately operated prisons and detention centers. The Justice Department recently filed a brief in the Federal Appeals Court opposed to California's statute prohibiting private prisons and immigration facilities. The government's position is aligned with that of private prison operator GEO Group. Neguse and over 20 other lawmakers have sent a letter to the Attorney General noting that the Department of Justice's position is contrary to President Joe Biden's goal to ensure the federal government does not use private facilities for incarceration. In a statement, Neguse said that there was an expansion of the use of private prisons for immigration detention under the Trump administration with less transparency and accountability. But now Neguse said that with President Biden, it's time to turn the page and support the ban on private prisons. In a separate matter, Neguse is introducing a bill that would ban the use of the sedative ketamine during arrests and detentions. Colorado Public Radio reports that the use of the drug in non-hospital settings has been under intense scrutiny after the death of Elijah McClain, who was injected with the drug by paramedics after police in Aurora detained him. Neguse's bill builds on legislation that Colorado's state legislature passed this year that limits the use of ketamine by first responders. The city of Longmont is trying to combat drag racing at high speeds on popular streets in response to recent complaints. The police department told residents on Facebook that it recognizes the ongoing issue and urges them to report any street racing they see. The Denver Post reports that Longmont's Public Safety Department is just one of many other agencies, including Boulder County, that has joined a task force against illegal street racing in Colorado. According to a deputy chief of the Longmont Public Safety Department, some cities are getting stricter with how they enforce street racing, and some are looking at enacting vehicle seizure laws. Tonight, the Arvada City Council will decide whether to allow Amazon to build a distribution center of over 100,000 square feet next to homes and popular walking and biking paths. The Denver Post reports that opponents say Amazon's project will destroy approximately 450 mature trees and create 23 acres of new parking lots. They say it will increase the amount of impervious surface with potential water runoff that could worsen flooding along Ralston Creek. Opponents also say the traffic at Amazon's facility will produce and exceed zoning limits. An Amazon spokesperson responded that the amount of trucks entering and leaving are within those allowed for light and industrial facilities. The Arvada Planning Commission has recommended the project go forward, but public comment has been overwhelmingly against it. The jury in the STEM school shooting case in Highlands Ranch is scheduled to hear closing arguments today and then begin deliberations. 20-year-old Devin Erickson faces first-degree murder charges from the events in May 2019 that resulted in the death of Kendrick Castillo and eight others being injured at the high school. Another defendant who was a juvenile at the time of the attack pleaded guilty. Defense attorneys rested their case on Friday without testimony from Erickson. A toxicologist testified that Erickson had become such a chronic drug user in the months before the shooting that he likely couldn't think, concentrate, or understand events around him that day. The Straight Creek wildfire that burned 8 acres 2 miles east of Dillon was reported as 100% contained yesterday. Two hotshot crews completed reinforcing containment lines and mopping up Sunday afternoon. Local crews will continue to monitor the fire burn area. The fire was first reported on Thursday. And firefighters have contained 50% of the Platte River fire in Jefferson County, which is burning about 10 miles southeast of Deckers. Fire officials at the U.S. Forest Service say they don't expect to have full suppression for several weeks because of the extremely rugged terrain. The National Weather Service in Grand Junction has issued an excessive heat warning for parts of the western slope starting at noon today and lasting until midnight on Friday. The forecast for extreme western Colorado calls for high temperatures to reach between 100 and 110 degrees for several days, and overnight lows will only be in the 70s and lower 80s. Grand Junction may reach an all-time record high of 106 degrees, which was recorded in 2005. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment and the Regional Air Quality Council have issued an ozone action alert day for the Front Range Urban Corridor from Douglas County north to Larimer and Weld counties, including the Denver-Boulder area, Fort Collins, and Greeley. The alert continues until at least 4 p.m. this afternoon. And the weather today, at least through Thursday, will be sunny and hot with highs in the upper 90s in Boulder and 100 in Denver. Overnight lows will be in the mid-60s. Right now, it's about 66 in Boulder and 70 in Denver and Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
This crisis is not over, and all of the impacts that have happened over the year are going to impact us for the foreseeable future.
That's Andrea Chiriboga Flor, Colorado State Director of 9to5, an organization focused on economic justice issues. The crisis she was referring to was that of housing.
High late fees, increase of rent, eviction, all of those issues were already a problem that were already affecting mostly a lot of people of color. But now that COVID happened, that problem was exacerbated a lot and came up in the news a lot. So some people who were not aware of it or were not impacted by the housing crisis now know. It in some ways gives us an opportunity to use all that information and that clarity around what does this housing crisis look like in Colorado to pass new laws. We were able to pass Senate Bill 173 that does a few things. It limits late fees. It also has more rights for folks going through the eviction process. But we know there's still work to be done.
Part of the pending work, says Chiriboga Flor, is organizing to overturn the state law that prevents cities and counties from instituting any form of rent control. She spoke with KGNU's Rosana Longo ahead of a well-attended online forum Sunday.
I want people to not feel alone. You know, if you can't afford rent, if you're struggling, this is not just on you. This is not your fault. We have a systemic problem. We have a global, in some ways, global housing crisis. You know, I think sometimes because of sort of the culture here in the United States of if you're poor, it's because you didn't work hard enough or you made the wrong decisions. And we know that's just not true. A lot of times we're set up, especially communities of color, are set up to fail because we don't have the systems in place that we need to be able to, you know, work a 40-hour minimum wage even and be able to have a family and be sustainable. Like, that's not even enough anymore at all, and it hasn't been for a long time. So I just want people to be gentle with themselves and realize we shouldn't be angry at ourselves. Like, we should be angry about how this system is set up and want to do something to change that.
The Housing Justice Forum drew more than 100 participants. Many speakers shared intense personal stories of struggling with high rents and other housing challenges. Here's an excerpt of the public comments made by Denver teacher Tim Hernandez.
I live, I teach, and I work in the barrio that I was raised in, which is a rarity in my neighborhood. I'm from North Denver, which means that on the north side of Denver, what people don't know is that our barrio, our neighborhood, and our community is responsible for the highest rate of displacement of Latinx people as a result of gentrification in the country. That is over Oakland, that is over Detroit, that is over New York, that is over anywhere else. It is the north side of Denver in my neighborhood, which makes me what people associate as an anomaly or a unicorn that I teach at North High School. But I will tell you that that makes me uncomfortable. And I will tell you because it is so indicative of the problem that so many teachers face that they can't afford to live in the neighborhoods and the communities that they teach in. If we understand that there is a dilemma and a problem with 90% of police officers not living in the communities that they serve, it is also a problem for educators to not be able to live in the communities that they serve. But we're not treating those issues the same because we're not willing to invest in our communities in the first place. We're not willing to make it possible for teachers and give dignity in dollar signs, not dignity in societal gestures like we saw last year with our first responders, dignity for essential workers in dollar signs. And it is so important because it is not that it is not something that I seek to exploit my identities or my experiences of this idea of that I'm willing to teach in my neighborhood. It is an honor to teach in my neighborhood. It is an honor that I instill in my kids that we cannot run away from the hood to save it. But an honor should not cost us everything. In Denver Public Schools, what people don't understand is 40% of teachers are anticipated to leave after Denver Public Schools after this year as a result of hybrid learning, virtual learning, and trauma placed upon educators, which means that we are headed towards the largest teacher shortage in Colorado history. But I think it's also important to recognize that it's not just a teacher shortage. We have a shortage of people who are master's level educated, willing to work for just above minimum wage. We have a shortage of people who are required to get a college degree to be able to perform their occupation without any promise of student loan forgiveness. We are at a shortage of people who are willing to wear hats like social worker, community leader, activist, public speaker, mentor, all different types of things, and social workers and counselors without any extra compensation for the actual work that we do. We have a shortage of people who are willing to look and bear the brunt of what our society is forcing our students to live in. I had students this year that were in bathtubs and in closets. The only quiet place in their entire house was in a closet in a bathtub where they could come to my class. And that's not to say that I'm the world's best educator, but it is so important because we have a shortage of people who are willing to take and cut the check that the government is not willing to make possible. But what I'm saying all of this is to say that it doesn't just hurt us, me as a teacher, that hurts our students. I have students that were evicted this year. I have students who had families deported this year. I have students who are living with mental health that Children's Hospital in Colorado has deemed a mental health epidemic and crisis. Students who rely on people like me, Mr. Hernandez, to be in room C215 with hot Cheeto snacks and breakfast snacks and books that I got at garage sales that you can take anywhere that you need to go home. But what is important and what I'm trying to get at the point is something like rent control is so seminal to me, to my barrio, and the people that live in my neighborhood, because we have been there historically and we have that dignity is not something that should cost us everything. Because if it costs me everything, it is going to cost our students everything. Teachers are weaving the future of our country, the future fabric of our nation, and we are weaving with thread instead of yarn. We are painting the future of the American canvas with a needle instead of a paintbrush. And that's not on accident. We have to be willing to back dignity for jobs with policies that are dignity oriented, that are trauma informed, that are based upon what our communities and our barrios need, not just for me so that I can do the work that I can, but so that our students can do the work that they can. Because if a student does not have a safe place to go home, they don't have a safe place in their mind to be able to learn. It is so big for all of us. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you. And I really, really thank you so much for this hard work. I hope that we can continue it. Thank you.
That was North High School teacher Tim Hernandez speaking yesterday at a forum for housing justice hosted by the Colorado Homes for All Coalition. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. A pilot program launched at Metropolitan State University of Denver will help 70 low-income students access food, housing, and other supports in order to stay on course to complete their degrees. School officials also see opportunities to help students in all corners of the state enroll in new online programs, and if the HOPES program is expanded, access public assistance to increase their chances of graduating. Eric Galatas with Public News Service has more.
Metropolitan State University of Denver is taking applications for a pilot program designed to help its lowest income students access food, housing, childcare, transportation, and other supports to help students stay enrolled and complete degrees. Will Simpkins, the university's vice president for student affairs, says the HOPES program can help prevent the single biggest reason students drop out of school: unanticipated financial obligations.
Could be an unanticipated transportation bill, you know, fixing a car, but it can be as little as an unanticipated $50 bill is enough, some national research says, to get a student off track.
The pilot program will be modest, working with 70 students that qualify for public assistance, but Simpkins notes that more than half of the school's 19,000-plus students could be eligible. Case managers will help students navigate multiple layers of red tape to ensure that they can access and maintain benefits as they pursue their degrees. Students will also receive dedicated academic and career coaching. Simpkins says ensuring that students' basic needs are met is essential for their success in the classroom and beyond. It's hard to focus on course material when you don't know where your next meal is coming from or where you will sleep that night. He also points to research showing that people receiving government assistance who complete a college degree are much less likely to need public assistance later in life.
In fact, there is a greater percentage of entire families moving out of generational poverty when that first generation gets that college degree. And so that's what we're shooting for.
As the state's only open access university, the goal is to expand the program to help more eligible students enroll, stay enrolled, and earn college degrees. Simpkins says students in far-off rural areas would also be able to participate, thanks in part to robust online learning programs developed during the pandemic. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Galatas.
¿Ya escuchaste la buena noticia? La radio comunitaria KGNU tiene su propia aplicación móvil. Descárgala para cualquiera de tus dispositivos digitales gratis y empieza a escucharnos ya. Did you hear the news? KGNU Community Radio has a mobile app. Download it for free in any of your devices and start listening to us now.
Not everyone has time to follow what's up at Boulder City Hall, so every couple of weeks, KGNU's Roz Brown checks in with Shay Castle, a journalist and the owner and publisher of Boulder Beat News, to share a bit about what's on the agenda for tomorrow night's City Council meeting.
Good morning, Shay.
Good morning.
We have a City Council meeting coming up tomorrow night, and we have this second reading and motion to adopt the electronic smoking device tax. Do you expect anything out of that? They did schedule 60 minutes for it.
So in 2019... the council had two very long hearings on whether or not to tax vaping devices. The intent was to discourage teen use, and they ended up, you know, passing those, I think, unanimously. But where the controversy has come in is that it's now being applied to cannabis as well, you know, because it's on the devices themselves, so irrespective of what they're being used to smoke. And the marijuana retailers are upset about this because in 2019, they asked, hey, will this apply to cannabis? And the answer was no, because it was to discourage teen vaping use, teen nicotine use, teen smoking. So they were under the impression that it wasn't going to apply to their products, and now it is. And it's a very hefty tax. It's 40%, which is a huge, huge tax. So I know the chamber has written to the council on behalf of some of the marijuana businesses, and I expect that some business owners will show up as well.
And we have a second public hearing on the rental license excise tax, making changes to implement provisions related to eviction prevention and rental assistance services. What should we expect from that?
They are making some adjustments and expanding the program a bit, actually. So this is the eviction prevention that passed in the last election. It was a citizen petition to try and provide legal assistance and rental assistance to renters facing eviction. And there are a few other tweaks they're making, and they're going to talk about the renter's board that's going to be established, the tenant board, who will weigh in on that program, collect data. I believe that board's going to be established and fully seated this year. So it's kind of an expansion of that program and an update as well.
Anything else that you see coming up? I know the gun barrel issue with the housing development at Celestial Seasonings is before the planning board this coming week. But anything else you see for City Council?
Well, I think a couple of the items tomorrow night that aren't public hearings are interesting. On the consent agenda, they are appointing two members to the planning board who will, they're former planning board members, and they're going to be voting on CU South annexation. Because there are so many planning board members, I'm not sure exactly how many, but quite a few are connected to CU, and so therefore they're kind of conflicted out from voting on the annexation, and the planning board has to approve any annexation. So that's an interesting thing to me. It's not something I've seen done before, but we've never had quite such a conflict in these issues before. And then the really exciting part won't happen tomorrow night, but the council is going to vote to call up the partial redevelopment of Diagonal Plaza, which, you know, the city has been trying to do something about Diagonal Plaza for more than a decade. And planning board wasn't super hot on the proposal, although they did give some positive feedback. So that vote will happen tomorrow night as well. The public hearing isn't scheduled until July 13th, so that's where the real action will be. But as you said, Spine Road is coming up before planning board, and then I'm sure council will vote to call it up as well. So quite a bit of development stuff happening over the summer.
All right, great. Thank you, Shay. We'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.
That was journalist Shay Castle. You can read more of Castle's work at boulderbeat.news. Also, if you'd like to hear our Connections program hosted by Joel Edelstein last Friday, discussing the pros and cons of the proposed housing development on Spine Road near Celestial Seasonings, you can go to our archives to retrieve that program at kgnu.org. On today's Metro Show at 3 p.m., host Miriam Schiff interviews Nicole Garcia, pastor of Westview Church in Boulder and a licensed professional counselor with the Umbrella Collective, about the overwhelming need for mental health counseling due to the pandemic.
What are you hearing and seeing?
What I've seen in my experience and working with my own clients, and also I supervise therapists through the Umbrella Collective, we're finding that mental health issues were magnified during this pandemic, primarily because our support systems were not available to us. We weren't able to go out and go on walks with the people who help support us. We weren't able to go visit friends. We weren't able to do a lot of things that usually we didn't think twice about. Going to the grocery store was a significant endeavor that you had to really think about whether or not, one, you actually wanted to go to the grocery store. Those are just anxieties you never thought about. You know, normal, everyday things became incredibly complicated.
Tune in to learn more at 3 p.m. today on KGNU's Metro Show with Miriam Schiff. And that does it for today's edition of The Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during The Morning Magazine. Again, that number is 303-447-9911.